Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you of the views that are expressed here, and not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guests, the views of our callers. Well, for the first hour this evening, well, we're not going to have a caller unless it's you call in, because this is open line Wednesday, and of course it's the day before Thanksgiving. But hopefully you'll be calling in and we can have a good conversation. Under any circumstances, I thought I'd talk about something that a lot of people have been talking about this week, and that is the issue of the O.J. Simpson. They were going to put on a program, a television program, and a book. If I'd done it, this is how I would have done it. Talking about, of course, the murder of his wife, Nicole. Well, of course, if you read what O.J. said, he said, look, I had an opportunity to make some money. It's blood money. I feel terrible about it, but I need the money, and I need it for my kids. But I didn't kill Nicole. And, you know, I think that it's a very interesting thing. If you watch the comedians, everybody ridicules O.J. Simpson and certainly the tragedy of what took place has ruined his life. But I saw something the other day that really impressed me. And O.J. was walking along, somebody was taking a motion picture of him, and a young man came up. He was a young black man. And he asked O.J. to sign something for him, the autograph. And the fellow, O.J., signed it and went on his way, nodded and acknowledged him. And I thought, you know, I'm sure that there are no white people who go to O.J. Simpson and ask him to autograph things. But if you were to survey the American people today, if you are white, you're convinced that O.J. Simpson killed his wife. And if you're black, I'd say that probably 95% of the people believe that O.J. was actually set up, that he was framed. And this is really a very interesting thing. If you go back, and if you remember that when the O.J. Simpson trial was certainly on the front burners as far as the everything was concerned, as far as the media was concerned, and they put O.J.'s picture on the front of Time magazine. Now, O.J. is a very, very light-skinned black man, but the picture that they put on the front of Time magazine was very, very dark-skinned. It was intentionally darkened so that everybody would know that he was a black man. Why would you do something like that? Unless, of course, you were doing something to impact the mind of the American people. And then, of course, day after day, week after week, month after month, many times they would actually stop the regular programming so we'd watch the spectacle of the O.J. Simpson trial. And it dragged on. It was really on one of the major issues, and of course when he was acquitted, everybody said, of course, it was just because he had good lawyers. And yet the jury was a mixture of black and white. They heard all of the evidence and they decided he wasn't guilty. So in the process of course watching the O.J. Simpson trial, why we put together a four tape set, which is really one of my favorite four tape sets, but of course most people really aren't interested in the O.J. Simpson trial, because of course they know he was guilty. How did we know he was guilty? How do we know what really went on? How many of you sat through the trial? How many of you have read all the books or the major books that were written about it? How many of you have heard about the HIT team, the Special Forces HIT team that was involved in an effort to create a race war in America and turned white against black and black against white? Right here in America, the land of the free, the home of the brave. Well, if you have a question or comment, give us a call. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and if you'd like to give us a call, again, our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, and we're talking about the O.J. Simpson trial. Basically, what we did was to interview four authors of four books. Each one was different and approached the O.J. Simpson issue from a different point of view. One of the books was written by a white man who sat next to a black man every day at the trial for all the months that it took. Now, the white man certainly was an intelligent individual. He was firmly convinced that they had framed a guilty man. In other words, in his mind, he had no question that O.J. Simpson was guilty, but he was sure he had also been framed by the police and certainly with the help of others so they could convict him, but he felt that they had framed a guilty man. That you hear the idea that they'd framed an innocent man? No, he was convinced that they'd framed a guilty man, but there was no question of police malfeasance in this. And then, of course, the man who sat beside the white man wrote a book, and they wrote a book together. I think it was called Black and White, as I remember. And the black man was just as convinced that O.J. was innocent. And that's really how things pretty well line up in America. There was a second book that we read, where we actually interviewed the author. And this man was in touch with people who worked for the police force who were very upset about the fact that there was no question that the police in Los Angeles had framed O.J. Simpson, had planted evidence to make sure that he was convicted. And, you know, that's a pretty serious charge, but you actually analyze what the evidence that was there, and there's no question he was framed. Who from the police department went to prison for framing O.J. Simpson, whether he's guilty or innocent? Is it all right for the police to frame people because they want them convicted? And were there perhaps other reasons for framing O.J. Simpson? The third book was really on the timeline and analyzing the prosecution's timeline, and it just simply showed that there could be no possible way in the world that the timeline was accurate. The things could never have occurred as they did. And it was a very, very scholarly approach to the story of O.J. Simpson. The fourth book in the series was certainly the most intriguing to me, and it was written by a man who I think is very sincere, and I talked to him a number of times. I have no question at all that what he was saying was true. And when we get back from this break, I'm going to certainly tell you what his book was about, because it puts an entirely different perspective on the story of O.J. Simpson. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and I just thought I'd talk a little bit about the recent fury over the fact that O.J. was going to make some money from a movie and from a book deal that he'd gotten. If I had done it, this is what I would have done. If Fox was going to publish the book, Fox was going to go ahead and make the docudrama, and it would be played on television, and they'd, I suppose, they'd sell advertising time. It was something like a $3 million deal. How much O.J. would have gotten this, I don't know. But as we were talking about the four tapes that I put together, and we still have this tape set, and nobody really is interested in the O.J. Simpson tape set. They have no idea how important this issue is as far as the stability of America, and will be as far as the stability of America in the coming years as we move into a period of crisis and chaos and racial disharmony and civil unrest. But I believe it's all was planned long ago. Well, I during the break, I was simply talking about the four tapes that we have in the four tape set on O.J. Simpson. But now, remember, this is Open Line Wednesday, and so we're looking forward to your calls. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But we interviewed four authors for our four tape set. One author was a white man who sat next to a black man. They were reporters, and they wanted to write a book on the O.J. Simpson trial. One man, of course, was black. One man was white. The white man was firmly convinced that the Los Angeles police force had framed a guilty man. It's an unusual phrase, but it framed a guilty man. In other words, in his mind, he was firmly convinced O.J. Simpson was guilty, but he was also sure that they had actually planted evidence to frame him, second book was written by somebody who was in contact with people in the Los Angeles police force, responsible police officers who hated to see legal malpractice and certainly malfeasance by the police force down there that had actually planted and altered the evidence to be sure that O.J. was convicted. And they had actually done everything they could to alter the evidence that had been collected to make sure that, of course, they would find evidence of Nicole's blood on his socks and things like that. And they actually poured the blood onto the socks. And there were people in the police force who were concerned about this and planting the blood various places to make sure that O.J. was convicted. The third book was on the timeline. And, of course, the prosecution's timeline of the various things that had happened, pointing out there was just no way the timeline could have been accurate. And the fourth book, and that was, of course, the key and the most important part of the story, was written by an author who had been contacted by somebody who had been part of the hit team that had been hired to kill Nicole Simpson. Now, why would anybody want to kill Nicole Simpson? Well, because they wanted to create racial disharmony in the United States. They wanted to turn black against white and white against black. And of course, the story is told there. And is it true? Well, I really didn't know at the time. I read the book and talked to the author. He was convinced it was true and that this man had come to him. He didn't want any money. He just wanted people to understand how the system really worked. And he was a professional killer. He was a professional, I don't know whether he'd been trained in the military, but if you remember how Goldman was actually killed, he was killed actually with a knife thrust to the flank that went in and picked up his inferior vena cava aorta, and he simply bled to death after the knife thrust. But you had to be a trained killer to know how to do that. And that wasn't, of course, O.J. O.J. Simpson did not know how to put this sort of a knife thrust in. Only somebody been trained in assassination would know. And then, of course, there was somebody else's skin under Nicole's fingernails. She had obviously fought her attackers. It wasn't O.J. Simpson. They never tried to find out who it was. But this story, it was really so intriguing, that, really, as you read it through. The idea that they would have staged the murder of Nicole Simpson to create racial unrest in America. Well, I certainly put together the four-tape set. We've talked it about a few times in years past and then sort of put it aside. There were always so many new issues coming up. And then, of course, it was about a year and a half, I guess, maybe 2 years ago, at the conspiracy conference I had a booth at, when most of the people were actually in at the major meeting, and I was sitting at the table where we had all of our four tape sets and videos and books out there on display, and a very attractive young black woman came up to the table, and she was looking at the material, and she picked up the O.J. Simpson four tape set. And I said, oh, yeah, that's a very interesting tape set. I said, it's one of my most important tape sets, and nobody's interested in O.J. Simpson anymore. And she looked at me rather quizzically, and I said, well, you really understand, I believe, and I really honestly do believe to this day, that this is all about turning black against white and white against black. That's why Time magazine, when they put O.J. Simpson's picture on the cover of their magazine, had his skin very, very black. That's why probably maybe the McCarthy hearings and the Iran-Contra hearings, we got more time focused on the O.J. Simpson trial than almost any other issue for many years. And this was all part of the program of focusing our attention, manipulating our reality and creating our concepts that the propagandists use. And it was to make us, of course, we were white, we were sure that O.J. was guilty. And if you were black out there, you were sure that he was framed. And of course, that old adage, if the gloves don't fit, you've got to acquit. Why in heaven's name would the prosecutor have asked O.J. to put on those gloves if she didn't know that they would fit? It was all beautifully staged, and the dancing Itos, and it was a wonderful spectacle, and our attention was focused on it, and of course, the blacks were relieved when O.J. was acquitted, and the whites were furious because it's getting away with murder. And you hear the comedians, and they still poke fun at him. But what happens if his story was true? What happens if he didn't kill Nicole? What happens if the police were, or certain people within the police were in on this whole scam? Well, anyway, we were standing there, and there in the meeting hall, in the display hall, and this very attractive black woman looked at me as I said, I believe that the purpose behind the O.J. Simpson trial was to actually turn black against white, and white against black, and it really worked very well. I said, you know, most white people believe O.J. Was guilty, and most black people feel that O.J. was innocent. He was framed. And she said, you know, that's really so interesting that you say that, because you're so, I don't know any black person who does not believe that O.J. was innocent and that he was framed, other than my brother. My brother was raised with white folks, and he thinks white. And he always believed that O.J. Simpson was guilty until recently, and it was just about 2 months ago. He called me at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'm sound asleep, and he calls me at 2 o'clock in the morning to tell me that he had just talked to a man who was with Special Forces, who told him that this was a Special Forces hit, that it was designed to create a race war. And, of course, the whole thing was an effort to turn black against white and white against black. And, you know, she ended up buying the 4-tape set. I don't know who she was. Probably will never see her again, at least in this world. But a very, very interesting and fascinating story. And as I contemplate that story of O.J., and then, of course, we see this recent spectacle, and, of course, they've destroyed his life. At one time, O.J. was a hero to most folks, white and black, and now he's a point of ridicule for the white population, the man who got away with murdering his wife. But he's always held he wasn't guilty. And then, of course, the Goldman family came after him and took everything he had economically and took his house and took his car. They even took his Heisman Trophy and all the football trophies so they could destroy them because they hate him so much. But what happens if he really was innocent? What happens if this really was an intelligence hit to turn black against white? And white against black. And it's so very difficult for most people to understand that there really are people who hate blacks, and some of them are in the highest echelons of our scientific community and certainly work at the highest levels of our government, but you cannot come out and tell people that sort of thing. They wouldn't understand the elitist concepts, which actually go back, many of these ideas were energized by the same philosophy that energized Adolf Hitler, who hated Jews, but he also hated blacks, because he was a disciple of Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, and he was a disciple of theosophy, and this has a racial hatred. They believe in the superiority of the Aryan race, and many of these people are alive and well in our society today. If you study the AIDS epidemic, as I have here in the United States, why, certainly the majority of new AIDS cases in the United States are in blacks. Why would that be? Are they more promiscuous than we are? No, of course they're no more promiscuous than the average white individual is. It is because the blacks have a predilection for the disease. If you go to Africa today, in Botswana, and we have the figures because they're being monitored by your Census Bureau. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, you'll be glad to know the U.S. Census Bureau is down in Africa monitoring the AIDS epidemic to see what a great job we're doing there with our public health policies. And in Botswana, 46% of the pregnant women are HIV positive and they're all going to die. Now that is either a terribly failed public health policy or a very successful genocidal policy. And I would like to suggest it's the latter, because if it was a failed public health policy, that changed the approach, wouldn't they? If it was a successful genocidal policy, they'd keep on doing what we're doing. I had a friend just back from Africa who told me that they just can't keep up with burying all the blacks there in South Africa. Our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Give us a call. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, of course, this whole issue was called to my mind when this last week when we were doing a series of programs with Dr. David Kennedy. And one of the things that Dr. David Kennedy, who's a dentist, brought out is that in the communities where they have fluoridated water, where they do use hydrofluorosilicic acid, and of course it's a waste product from the fertilizer industry, between 62 and 67% of our communities are fluoridated. And of those those communities that are fluoridated, about 91% uses hydrofluorosilicic acid. And if you check the blood level of lead in the blood of children with who are in areas where they have this water fluoridation with hydrofluorosilicic acid, why the blood level actually doubles in whites, quadruples in Hispanics, and goes up sixfold in blacks. In other words, there's no safe level of lead. And if you have lead, you have metal deficiency. And not only that, but it provokes violent behavior and criminal behavior. It's just what the lead does. It's the effect of its toxic effect on the human mind. And here in the United States, all these communities where they are fluoridating the water, they know. These scientific studies are out there if anybody wants to get them, and you can always get in touch with us. We'll get them for you. They know that you have six times as high blood levels, and there's no safe level of blood, but it's six times as high in blacks than in whites. Is that why in the United States today, one in every three, a young black man, is either in prison or probation or parole? Is this why so many blacks simply don't seem to be able to think and think clearly? Is it possible that we would be poisoning them here in the United States? Could anything be truly that wicked? Now, I happen to be white, if you haven't suspected, but I believe every black person is a unique individual made in the image and likeness of God, and we should be very, very concerned about what's going on. And I hope you will share my concern, and I hope you'll think about what I've said tonight to understand that there really is intense racial hatred on the part of the people who are part of the other side, who come from the dark side. And there really is a dark side. There really are secret societies. Theosophy is a real religion. You can go to their website and read about them. Every major city in America has a metaphysical bookstore where they sell the books written by Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, books like The Secret Doctrine. Well, we've got a caller, and we're hoping other callers will be coming on. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But right now, let's go to Jeff calling from Denver. Hi, Jeff. How are you doing?
Really good, Dr. Stan. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Do you listen to our morning program there in Colorado?
Let's see. This morning, no, I didn't get it. I'm actually in Wyoming now.
Oh, okay, fine. Okay, well, Chris, we do get into Wyoming with our program, too.
Not on the 8 a.m. program.
We don't, huh?
Well, I listen to that one on 1360 out of Johnstown.
Right, so that's what I'm speaking of, right.
Right, right. Anyway, a question for you here. Are you saying that there is compelling evidence to suggest that the Simpson case was the result of a special operations hit?
All I'm telling you is what one book says and what one woman told me, and hold that, all I'll be right back. Well, Jeff is calling from Colorado, and he was listening to my remarks, and he said, "Am I saying that there's compelling evidence that the Nicole Simpson death was some sort of a special operations hit? I'm only telling you what one book said and what one woman told me. A story you'll never hear elsewhere. I don't know. I sure like to have an independent evaluation of it, but we're never going to have that. He's been declared guilty. But in the mind of the average white person, he's as guilty as sin. And the average black man looks upon him and says, that's how blacks are treated in America. They frame him and they send him to prison.
Yeah, you know, I totally agree that it is being used, the case was used to create a barrier that, you know, you know, possibly things, people thought that things had gotten a little bit better in terms of race relations, but when you saw those, CNN had the split screen, the reactions of white versus black in that thing, that really put a damper on any hope of that, didn't it?
It sure did, and you know, if you go back, and you can actually, I'm sure at your library, would have a copy of that picture of O.J. on the front page of Time magazine, and notice how they've intentionally and purposely darkened his skin. And that was the first clue that I really had, that there was more to this story than met the eye. And then, of course, the way they focused our attention on it and played this whole thing up, and and what a rotten guy O.J. Simpson was. They demonized him like they demonize anybody who's telling the truth today about so many things going on. So all I'm telling you is an interesting aside. It's a fascinating four-tape set. And I think this one book, which we, of course, review there with the author, isn't it interesting that nobody's ever heard of his book, where he writes about this Special Forces team, or at least some organization, a group of professional killers that were being recruited specifically to kill Nicole, to create this racial animosity, and then having the story actually repeated to me by a woman who had no reason to lie to me at all. And I really wish I'd taken her name and gotten in touch with her brother, because he had talked to, at least according to her, he had talked to somebody from the Special Forces unit that knew all about the team that had been set there to create this racial animosity. Anyway, what are your thoughts about it, Jeff?
You know, I'll tell you what, obviously, there is a possibility that everything is not a conspiracy, that the elite that we talk about so much, that they're going to pick and choose. They're going to say, hey, we can use this story. Hey, look what's going on here. Yeah, hey, let's use that. And they'll use it in a certain way. But to make a jump that because they're using a story in a certain way to achieve a certain end, that doesn't mean that, in fact, the official story in this particular case may not have been true.
Well, of course,
I don't know whether it is not is or not either, but I think it would go a long way. I mean, if I were to know, for example, this guy that wrote this book, I have not read it. I have not listened to this four tape set. I'll get it now.
I hope you will. And I hope you'll just, I can tell you, quite honestly, Jeff, I don't know. But I do know that they used this. I do believe that they framed him, whether he's innocent or guilty is not the question. They framed him. Why didn't anybody in the police force go to prison for that? And why is it that you've never heard what I've said before? Because it's so far from the way we really think. You know, we have our beliefs, and most people are firmly convinced that O.J. is as guilty as sin. And all I do is bring this up to cause people to begin to question what we've been conditioned to believe.
I'll tell you what, I've got an open mind about it. I'm going to listen to it, but I will tell you this. There are a lot of people listening right now that are in their heads saying, you know what, I agreed with everything Dr. Stan had said up until this point, but now he's gone too far.
Well,
Would you agree?
You're probably right, Jeff, but I'm going to tell you what I think. And I'll tell you, I don't know what happened, but I do know that this is being used to create racial animosity. And I do know there are people who hate blacks. And we only have to look at the AIDS statistics in this country and throughout Africa. And we only have to look at what we know about the effects of water fluoridation and how it, of course, singles out blacks for increasing the lead level. And we only have to look at the jail statistics, where 1 in 3 young black men is either
in prison. No argument there. Have a good night, Dr. Stan.
Good night. God bless. All right, fine. Well, our telephone number, again, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Maybe you think this is really crazy, and maybe he did do it. I don't know. I wasn't there. But I'm raising a question, and I'd like to know what you think on this or any other issue you'd like to talk about. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. The one thing I will tell you is why the one book that talked about this hit team, you've never heard about it. I wonder why.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. It's Open Lined Wednesday, and so if you'd like to give us a call, you have a question or comment, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and we'll talk about maybe what you'd like to talk about. Or if not, why, you're going to have to hear my talking. I don't have anything really prepared, so maybe we could talk a little bit about some of this new legislation that has been passed as a result of 9-1-1. Now, of course, we're doing a series of letters, and I do hope that many of you have actually read our August and September newsletters. The October newsletter is going out. I'm almost done with the November newsletter. And I hope to put in four newsletters the real story of the true story of 9-1-1. In other words, what was this really all about? Was it, of course, as we've been told, was it a conspiracy on the part of 19 hijackers who were smuggled into this country or got into this country by one means or another and hijacked four planes and crashed them into the Twin Towers and the Pentagon and the other plane just crashed there in Pennsylvania? Or is this whole story contrived? And there are so many questions that have to be asked. I think one only has to watch the Sydney, the coming down of Building 7, 8 hours, about, it came down at 5:20 in the evening, about 8.5 hours after the first tower was hit, the North Tower was hit. And if you simply, you can do that, you can go onto the internet, type in Building 7 videos, and they have a whole flock of sections there. You can watch that building come down again and again, and you'll notice what happens is the first thing that happens is the roof begins to actually cave in the middle. And that is a standard technique if you're going to have a controlled demolition of a building. You have to actually have to, take down the support in the middle of the building. Otherwise, as it begins to fall, it'll fall outwards. If you want it to fall in its own shadow, you take out the central support first, and then you destroy the base of the building, which is exactly what happened. And Building 7, I've watched it again and again. I'm convinced it's a controlled demolition. The government has no excuse for that, why it came down. But they cannot tell you the truth because think of the implications. If there was a controlled demolition, it means the intelligence agencies were involved and they murdered 2,985 people that morning. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is Open Line Wednesday, and let's see who we have on line one here. We got Tom calling. And hi, Tom. It's Tom from Ohio. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, Dr. Stan, I don't know.
Why is that?
I'm not sure if the day is quite over or not.
All right, fine. Anything, do you have something you'd like to talk about?
Yes, I'd like to tell everybody that before they take that bite of turkey tomorrow, to thank God and be grateful that they were not aborted and they got to live to eat that turkey.
Amen to that. Well, of course.
There's not many. There ought to be a remembrance every day or for 1 minute about what's going on in this country.
Well, I believe that God is going to bring his vengeance on this country. And people all say, God bless America. But I ask, why should God bless America when we've allowed these terrible things to happen?
It is.
In fact, we heard an amazing story yesterday. You know who this Tom Haggard is? This is Ted Haggard, I guess it is. The homosexual who had this big church in Colorado Springs. But actually, he was the president of the National Association of Evangelicals. 30 million people are represented, and he was the head of the organization they represented, and he was using his position to write to people like Senator John Wagner, Warner, I should say, and do everything he could to undermine Christianity. And there was the military appropriations bill was being held up because there was a writer on that said that, the military should be allowed to have prayers without anybody interfering with them. And if a chaplain wanted to pray in the name of Jesus, he could. And here's this man pretending to be a Christian, who writes representing the National Association of Evangelicals with 30 million members, writing to John Wagner and saying, we don't need that writer on there. Just go ahead and pass it. You're holding up the military appropriations. A homosexual man, and of course there is a strong spiritual component to homosexuality, doing everything he could to undermine Christianity. And think of all the harm that he did. And how are the does God feel about the leaders of organized religion in America undermining a prayer in our military?
I don't think that he's feeling very good about it. I think he's probably holding back. It's only his grace that's letting it go. And I hope that we are fortunate enough to escape out of his wrath, because there's not enough so-called Christians doing anything about it. Very few like you and a few others, but not enough to really get in there and knock a dent in the devil's head. But I heard something on a talk show last night. There is a congressman, and I missed his name. This guy keeps 10-year-old girls in cages and has sex with bears.
Well, I...
I was telling the guy to recommend V for Vendetta movie, because it has a parallel of what's going on in this country, down to the drugs, everything that was in that movie, just about.
Except,
and the guy says, oh, well, it's got too much innuendos in it. And I said, well, look, man, they've got congressmen up there having sex with bears keeping, and they got other ones having open brothels, and they got ones that are murdering kids and getting away with it.
Well, now, we don't know that this is somebody that said that. I know there's a lot of corruption on there, but I'm not going to say that it happens. Maybe some reports of that happening. We know there's a lot of depravity up there. We know a lot of these people are into things they shouldn't be. But anyway, I share your concern, Tom. We live in a sinful world, and we need, of course, try to get people to understand that there is a spiritual battle going on, and most Christians don't even know what's happening.
And I've got my shield held close and my sword at the ready.
God bless. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Good night. God bless. Okay, well, our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, of course, we do know, of course, that one of the congressmen, I think it was Bernie Sanders, if I'm not mistaken, he was a homosexual congressman who was actually certainly running a brothel out of his home. He had, of course, a male lover, and he was a male lover, was running a brothel out of the congressman's home and taking his friends on midnight tours of the White House, of course, with the congressman's help and support. And we do know that there's certainly many people in our government are affiliated with the Bohemian Grove and the depravity that takes place there. And if you have not yet seen the video that that Alex Jones put out on the Bohemian Grove, let me suggest you get it. We actually carry it because I think it's rather unique and very well done. And, of course, a lot of good people have belonged to the Bohemian Grove. Certainly Richard Nixon belonged to it. Richard Nixon detested the people there and detested what they did. But, of course, he wanted power, and he was quite willing to, you know, to rub shoulders with these people to get the power. And, of course, David Gergen, who was interviewed on the Alex Jones video, had actually written in the Alex actually had a take from the article where Gergen talked about, you know, getting out of the Bohemian Grove because he didn't want to be running around with all these naked people. He thought this was coarse and vulgar. And yet these are some of the most powerful men in America today. And then the stories, of course, of their sexual aberrations that take place at the Bohemian Grove. We actually have a 4-tape set of the Bohemian Grove where you'll actually hear a conversation with a woman who was sent there by the CIA. She was a sex slave used by the Central Intelligence Agency to compromise politicians and prominent people. And, of course, there's actually four tapes in the 4-tape set on the Bohemian Grove. You may very well want to get that. If you're only going to get one thing, though, I would get Alex Jones a video on the Bohemian Grove, which we carry. And I think it's important because you're actually going to see their ceremony where the leaders of the Western world don their black robes with their black hoods and, of course, have their pagan chants, and they stand before the owl, the 40-foot owl. And we actually have the material that actually they put out. If any of you'd like to see it, we'd be glad to send you the pages from their book, Volume 4 of their book, where they talk about how they worship the owl. This, of course, is a symbol of Moloch, of Lucifer. Why would they put that in their own book? Somebody got me this set of books. They're quite expensive. Published by the Bohemian Grove. Nobody's supposed to have them but members. And there they talk about how they worship the 40-foot owl. I wonder if any of them pretend to worship our Lord Jesus Christ. Well, our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And let's go to Steve, who's calling from Yellowstone. Hi, Steve. How are you doing?
Hi. Pleasure to be on. Thank you very much.
Do you listen to our programs regularly?
No, this is the first time, and I'm on my cell phone in the park, but I do enjoy your show tonight. And I was calling about the last call, the gentleman who said the congressman had sex with bears.
Right. I think that sounds a little far out as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I think that's pretty crazy, but good sex with a fox now and then is good, or a sheep. I enjoy sheep.
All right, well, thanks very much, Steve. I think that sometimes people love just, and I certainly think that anybody who talks about that sort of thing, you get in a little trouble if you try to get too close to a bear. I don't think anybody's going to do it, and I think you can't believe everything you hear on talk radio. And there's some information that's great, and there are actually some people that actually are... just like to, of course, come up with tall stories to see if anybody believe them. And then there's some people who are actually disinformation agents who are calling in to put out false information to discredit the conservative and or the Christian movement. So certainly I just say, listen to people, try to figure out who you can believe. And of course, you can hear people call in our program, and I can't control what they say. I will challenge them if I think it's a little far out, and the idea, of course, of having intimate relationships with the bear. How would you control the bear? Anyway, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have a question or if you have a comment. Well, we can certainly talk a little bit about something that has been really very, very of concern to me. And that is what happened on the morning of September 11th, 2001. And there are a number of key questions that nobody wants to ask. We've already talked about Building 7 coming down. We did a program earlier today where we talked about the passport. We were told that one of the passports of one of the men who was on, one of the hijackers is on the plane that crashed into the North Tower, that was American Flight 11, survived the fiery crash and was found on the street about a block and a half away from the North Tower. Now remember, if we find any evidence of complicity by the intelligence agencies, and if they're planting information that isn't true, it's sort of like the O.J. Simpson case, you have to throw out everything else they've come up with. If the police in Los Angeles actually framed O.J. Simpson, then none of the evidence that was there can be depended on. And if the intelligence agencies planted evidence to confuse us about what happened on the morning of September 11th, then nothing could be accepted as accurate. And, of course, you know the story of the magic passport. And I always ask, do you honestly believe that somehow this passport got out of the pocket of the hijacker, and then got out of the flaming wreckage of the plane he was in, and then got out of the flaming North Tower, and then, of course, just was able to float down and be found a block and a half away from the North Tower, intact, not a single mark on it, not a singe or anything else? Do you honestly believe that? And if you do, why, of course, then maybe you probably believe that the passport that they found in Pennsylvania at the crash site there was legitimate. And, of course, that was a passport that supposedly, survived the fiery crash that consumed the plane, consumed all of the passengers, consumed everything on the plane other than a debris field, which stretched out for 8 miles. And if the plane crashed into the ground, how could you have a debris field that was 8 miles wide and one of the engines 2 miles away? Do you honestly believe that the engine bounced 2 miles? Is it possible that they're lying to us? But this one passport, of course, was displayed on the FBI website. We have pictures of it. And it's slightly burned. But they want us to believe that this passport survived so we'd know who was on the plane, which one of the hijackers. Well, let's go to Paul, who's calling from Arizona. Hi, Paul. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. It's interesting, the things you're talking about tonight. You know, an hour ago, I would have said that O.J. Simpson was guilty because that was my response at the time. But considering the way I feel about our moral situation here, particularly in the government, I can't think of anyone that I wouldn't take their word over the government's word.
Well, I think that I think it's a fascinating story, and the four-tape set's great because you'll actually hear an interview with the author who talked to the man who claimed he was from a hit team. Maybe O.J. is guilty. I can't say, but there is so much evidence there that makes me feel that this whole issue was used to turn black against white and white against black. And I was really reminded of that the other day when I saw this young man run up to O.J. to get him to sign an autograph. I realized he was black. I don't think you'd find very many whites who'd want O.J. Simpson's autograph.
Well, I actually called to talk about 9/11.
Okay, fine. Go right ahead.
I don't want to make myself out to be a dummy, but is there any foolproof evidence that indicates that the planes that they talk about ever were? I mean,
there were planes. The planes, I think, took off, and I certainly Barbara Simpson was on the plane that Barbara Olson, I should say, was on the plane that supposedly hit the Pentagon. But we don't know because they won't release the pictures of the plane that hit the Pentagon. And if there's nothing to conceal, then why are they concealing it?
Yeah,
there were planes. But I don't even get into that argument because we do not know. I mean, some people are making all sorts of statements like no planes hit the Twin Towers. And I think that sort of discredits themselves. And then, of course, they were holograms. They were holograms that you saw.
Well, I think planes hit the towers. But I'm wondering if they were... let's say that they substituted planes.
All right, fine. I think that here you're getting into trouble, your conjecture. I try to stay away from that completely. I don't even like to talk about the Twin Towers coming down. You know, all I really want to talk about is Building 7 coming down because they can't defend it and they can't explain why it came down. And if Building 7 was a controlled implosion, then controlled demolition, everything else is a lie. So
stick
with the things we can actually prove, and don't let them get you out on a limb because they'll saw it off for you.
Yeah, I don't have anybody that'll listen to me, but I just it was just an intellectual thing in my mind. If those planes that hit the Twin Towers were not the ones that took off.
Anything
is
possible.
I guess,
we don't know, Paul. We just don't know, and we're better off not even to discuss those issues. But I understand how you feel. All of these things go on in our mind. But what we want to do is try to make people realize there's a problem. And we're not going to do it by talking about the Twin Towers. We're going to do it by talking about Building Number 7. We're going to do it by talking about the fact that the morning of the attack, there were actually military exercises. They've concealed that fact from the American people. And it was because of the military exercises that confused the people at the FAA and NORAD that nothing was done that morning.
Yeah.
And actually, of course, we'll be talking more about that in my next newsletter. But one young man has come forward. He was actually at the central headquarters, Centrom, in Tampa, Florida that morning. And he said, actually, of course, that they had these military exercises, and they took all of the fighter planes that should have been guarding Washington, D.C. from Andrews Air Force Base, and they flew them west, which is why there were no planes to guard our nation's capital.
It's amazing what Osama got done out of a cave, isn't it?
Yeah, we remember Osama bin Laden had been working very closely with the CIA, but they can't let you know that. And you can go up, of course, in, on the Internet and type in Osama bin Laden, Dubai, and you'll get the articles about how just about 2 months before September 11th, Osama was in the hospital in Dubai for dialysis, meeting with the CIA. Those articles come out of Le Figaro in France. They come out of articles all over the world. And many people in other countries believe that Osama always was, and still is today, a CIA asset, because I think he's been dead for a year or two. But we don't have to worry. We can always see his picture on television, can't we?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, we're going to have to run. We got a full board.
All right.
God bless you. Thanks for calling.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. And we'll be back here in just a moment, and we'll try to get to Don from Texas and Steve from Spokane. Be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty on Open Lines Wednesday. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. We've got Don calling from Texas. Hi, Don. How are you doing?
Yeah, just fine, Dr. Stan. I have a question of what is your opinion on what happened to Fritz Springmeier, and what do you think also about his work on the 13 Illuminati bloodlines?
I've read the book. I don't know what to make of it. I don't really take a position on it. I don't really know what's happened to Fritz. I know he ended up in prison for a while, and so I really can't comment on it. Because if I don't know, I'd rather not comment on it.
Yeah, I hear you. What is your opinion also on what has happened to Dr. Kent Hovind?
I think it's a tragedy what's happened to Kent, but I do not think that you can fight this system by doing it the way he did. I know Kent. I like Kent. He gives me credit for some of the pictures he used because he got them for me, and I appreciate that. But I do not think that he was right in trying to fight the IRS the way he did. I think that he's a very courageous guy, but I think he's destroyed himself. He's destroyed his ministry.
Right.
We obey these laws. We pay our taxes, and then we can fight the system, and you're not going to be able to fight it from a cell.
Right.
But I think we all should pray for Kent. I think his heart's in the right place, and I think he loves the Lord.
I believe so, too.
Okay, God bless. Thanks.
Okay, sir.
Bye. Let's go to Dee calling from Spokane. Hi, Dee. How are you doing?
Hello there. Good evening, Dr. Stan. I wanted to briefly discuss Mark Furman's role in the O.J. Simpson affair. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it was suggested he may have planted evidence.
There has been many, many people who have suggested that, yes.
Well, before about March of 05 last year, I thought Mark was one of the good guys. After all, he served honorably in the U.S. Marine Corps and the LAPD. But what terribly disappointed me and now raises doubts that indeed he might have been capable of helping, quote-unquote, the O.J. Simpson case along was his disparagement and callous disregard for the life of one Terry Schiavo. And initially, I think he referred to her as a vegetable, or her brain had no more functionality than a milkshake. He was saying stuff like this on his radio show in Spokane. And in the past, by the time Furman and the rest of the media had basically condemned, given her a death sentence in the corrupt judicial system in Florida, I think what must have happened, his buddy Sean Hannity, who had done his homework and who had interviewed Terry's nurses, I think he must have taken Mark aside and told him, hey, buddy, you're making a big mistake and you're ruining your reputation as a detective. And get this, Dr. Stan, about 3 months later, Furman had the gall to write a scholarly hardback book about the Schiavo case.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, we've got Sydney D. Calling from Spokane, who is, of course, raising the name of Mark Furman, who was one of the police officers on the O.J. Simpson case. And if you listen to our four-tape set, you'll find, of course, there were some people who believed that Mark Furman was actually instrumental in planting evidence. I can't say he was, but there were people who suggested that he planted evidence specifically, intentionally, to send O.J. Simpson to prison. And, of course, a police officer doesn't have the right to do that. I think it's very interesting that he has his own talk show in Spokane. Obviously, he must have pleased somebody to get a job like that. Anything else you'd like to say, Dee?
Well, it's just that anybody that would cash in so callously like he did with writing that book, after she's dead and gone, and there's nothing to be done about Terry Schifo, and didn't do his homework, and just completely lazy about it, and then he cashes in. It's just disgusting.
All right. Well, I appreciate your calling, and I share your concern about Terry Schifo and what I know about her, why it was a case of cold-blooded murder. Thanks so much for calling. And, of course, this is Dr. Stan. And anyway, of course, some of our listeners are going to be leaving us there up in the great Northwest. And I just want to mention that tomorrow's Thanksgiving. And as much as we are critical of what goes on, we have a great deal to be thankful for. We live in the greatest country in the world. We just need to reclaim our heritage. People don't understand that if you expect to enjoy the benefits of freedom, you're going to have to work for them. You're going to have to fight for them. But the way we fight is with truth, and we have truth on our side, and with prayer, and with trying to reach people with an understanding of the spiritual battle in which we're engaged, and that there really are organized demonic and satanic forces in the world today. And that's, of course, the recurrent message here at Radio Liberty. But be thankful we live in America, because if I had my choice, I'd rather be here on the front lines of this spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And we should enjoy our Thanksgivings as long as we can. And who knows, perhaps we're worthy of God's blessing. Why, it will come once again on what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is the time I really need to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we really depend upon those of you who listen to our programs to help us. And if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, our telephone number is 1-888-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, I would be glad to send you one if you call. But, of course, you can always get the newsletters on the Internet at RadioLiberty.com. You can look at the various tape sets and certainly the videos and books that we carry, books that you need to read to understand what's going on. And certainly we have all sorts of books, some of them very controversial books, but they will all help you to be able to begin to put together the dots to understand the true nature of what's going on today, because you have to understand the media is controlled as a whole. We've got too many Mark Furmans who are, you know, have access to the radio, and I'm sure they're not paying for the radio time as we are, fortunately, certainly on many of our stations. The people who own the stations have been very, very generous, and so we can afford to be on. If we were having to pay the full rates, we would never be able to reach as many people as we do. But we're blessed to have almost 60 different outlets every week. A lot of these are just half an hour a week, but at least people are hearing the truth half an hour a week. Now, of course, you can hear our programs on the Internet. You can listen to our programs on shortwave. You can listen to us on satellite. We have a satellite program that we're on 9 hours a day, along with a couple of our friends. That's Telstar 5. You can get information on all of this by going to our website at www.radioliberty.com. And we do hope many of you will get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You'll want to get the book, Foundations, Their Power and Influence, which tells about how these foundations, created by men of great wealth, have been working to destroy this country for the better part of a century. The Rockefellers, the Ford, the Carnegies. Well, we'll be back here in just a moment with the next hour right here at Radio Liberty. If you can listen in on the Internet at RadioLiberty.com, do it. If not, have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. Right now we have with us on the line Eric Kupfschmidt, and we've had Eric on before. Eric had put together a great book and a great DVD on the Twin Towers coming down, and of course Building 7 coming down, and he was one of the first people who were beginning to point out that there's no way that the Twin Towers could have come down the way we've been told they came down. And in his book, of course, he will show you on one of the Twin Towers as it begins to collapse, where the top of the building begins to tilt off about 20 or 30 degrees to one side, and I'm not sure what happened after that, but I know if you watch the pictures were shown over and over and over again on television, those that were seen repeatedly and are ingrained in our mind, you never see that top of the building falling off. Eric, why is that? What really happened there? Which tower was that where the top started to fall off?
That was the South Tower.
All right, fine. Well, how far did that actually tilt, did it actually fall off?
Well, in the photographs, you can see it tilting to a maybe 20 degrees or so, and then it gets lost in the dust, so you can't see it, you know, after a certain, about just a couple seconds into it, it disappears into its own dust. And then, of course, when you look on the ground, you can't see anything at all. All you see are little scraps of steel. So the implication is that this giant piece of building cracked and started tipping over, and then when you look at it on the ground, somehow it pulverized itself. So you got a problem here. Explain how come it didn't just crash onto the ground and maybe crumple a little, but it should be there. And the only way to see that something is strange is to look at the photographs, but you don't see those photographs in Newsweek or Time magazine. They just don't want to show you.
And I think that really, just ordinarily when we see this happening, we see the buildings come directly down, and we never see the top of that building tilting off to one side. So it's the direction that they shoot this from. And this, of course, I share your concern, you know. You always wonder what happened to the tops of the building, and suddenly they're simply all lost in this cloud of smoke and, or dust or whatever it is, pulverized cement, I suppose. But, you know, of course, the one thing that really bothers me is, you know, why would you have that intense pulverization? If it was simply pancaking, there'd be no reason why you would simply dissolve all the cement in this massive cloud of dust. There had to be something more to that, wouldn't you say? Like explosives that would have blown that up, along with over 1,100 bodies of the people who died that morning that have never been found. What are your thoughts on that, Eric?
Oh, definitely. It's the pulverization of the building that's one of the signs of explosives, and the lack of all the bodies, the computers. There's nothing. No flooring. There's no elevators, shafts. No stairways. Everything has been disintegrated, and even the firemen were commenting on it. It was so surprising, even to the firemen.
All right, fine. We're going to be back here in a moment or two with Eric Kupfschmidt, and we'll welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty. And Eric's done a tremendous amount of work. We're indebted to him. He was one of the first people who really began to raise the question, what really happened on 911? Well, Eric, you picked this story up, and how did you happen to get involved in this whole story?
Well, I was like most people originally. I thought the Arabs just attacked us from all the meddling in their affairs. You know, I just thought it was retaliation. It was only after seeing people complain on the Internet that something was wrong with the attack, and my initial reaction was that these conspiracy nuts are seeing something that doesn't even exist. But after a while, it just got to me, so I started to look into it, and I started to look through the photographs and the video and the seismic data, and that's when I realized there is something wrong. So I got into it in a roundabout way only because of seeing other people complain that something was funny about this attack.
And, of course, really, of course, you go into building number 7 as well as, other, of course, other buildings, 3, 4, 5, and 6. In fact, even the way that they fell down is very unique. No other buildings, steel reinforced, have ever gone down the way they did, have they?
No. Building 7 and the two towers, there's never been a steel-framed building that has done anything except maybe they've had a few buckling beams from the fire, you know, which cracked a couple floors, but no steel building has ever fallen apart from a fire. And that one in Madrid that was burning, looking like a torch, burning the entire night, that one stood even the next day after burning the entire night, and the fire there was much, much more intense. And so we've got fire after fire after fire throughout history. Never has any steel building even broken into two pieces, let alone disintegrate into dust. So these are all signs that something's fishy. And what has recently come about is that a video has finally been released that shows the South Tower about a minute before the collapse, and you can see some molten iron pouring out of the building at about the level where the plane supposedly crashed. And this video is now on the Internet. People can see it. You can see a stream of molten iron coming out of the building. Now, how did that get in there? How did molten iron get into the building? There's no way to explain that except for thermite, which is sort of like an explosive, except that it's a quiet burning explosive. It doesn't make a loud noise. And Professor Stephen Jones of Brigham Young University, a physics professor, has even gotten a hold of a sample of the rubble, and he says it is matching thermite. This means that somebody got thermite into the building or into the airplane. The video alone is proof that somebody put explosives into either the building or the airplane.
All right, where did this video come from? Do we have any idea?
Well, FEMA...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Eric was just saying that there is a video that's recently been released that shows what appears to be molten metal coming out, just at the level of the where the attack took place and running down the side of the building. And, of course, what is going to create molten metal? I've seen lots of fires, but I've never seen a fire that would have molten metal, and this suggests that the use of thermite. But I was questioning, where did this video come from? I mean, has this been planted? Are they setting up a straw man to knock down?
Well, yeah, that's the possibility. Where did this video come from? What's interesting is in my book, which I put together in 2002, I mentioned on page 38 that FEMA has, in their report, talked about a video that in which molten metal is seen streaming out of the window. And so I contacted the guy who supposedly made the video and said, can I see it? But they wouldn't let me see it. So FEMA was talking about this video. It's in their report from in 2002, but they wouldn't let anybody see it. But now there is a video on the Internet that shows this. And so what it may be is that somebody finally released it. After all these years, they finally released it. And we can see that FEMA is correct. I initially dismissed it as nonsense, the idea that, you know, there's molten metal pouring out of the tower. It seems so ridiculous. But it's true, and the reason they wanted to keep this a secret is you can't explain this. This is molten iron. This is not molten tin. It's not molten aluminum. It's molten iron, and you can't melt iron in an office fire. You can't melt it with jet fuel. This is 100% proof that somebody put some type of explosive in the building.
Or at least something that would create this intense heat and melt iron,
right,
or aluminum or really whatever it is that we see going down the side of the building. It could be, of course, aluminum, couldn't it? Melt it?
Well, that's the possibility. And so what Professor Jones of Brigham Young University did is he did some experiments, and he what he what his experiments prove is that this particular material was not aluminum, because you can tell by its characteristic, the way it's glowing, the way it's behaving, it is not aluminum. And he got a hold of a sample of some of the material, the rubble, and he analyzed it, and it shows the characteristics of thermite, which is a mixture. It's sort of like an explosive, but it doesn't blow up with a popping noise. It burns. It's a quiet type of explosive they use for normally repairing railroad ties and cutting through steel. They use it a lot for you can cut through steel quietly without explosives going off. You see, it's not a real loud explosive. So he proves it. I mean, he's done it. He's done the experiments. He's analyzed the rubble. It is thermite, and this would explain why FEMA never wanted to release this video.
Well, of course, for our listeners out there, Dr. Stephen Jones is a physicist at Brigham Young University, and he really is a very quiet, very scholarly individual, works for the 9/11 scholars, and you really want to read his material. You'll find it on the 9/11 Journal, actually, website. 9/11 Journal, and we recommend people go there. But Stephen Jones, of course, had the courage to speak out and say, look, there is no way that the buildings could have collapsed the way they did. They were collapsing. The Twin Towers collapsed just about at the speed of the fall of gravity. In other words, if you dropped a ball from the top of the building, it would fall just about the same rate that the buildings did. And of course, there's no way, and this has been calculated by the physicists, and they say, look, there's a certain amount of energy that comes with the fall and the gravity, but there's no way that what you saw could have simply happened by accident. There had to be explosives there. Well, of course, he got into real trouble with his employer, Brigham Young University. He eventually was put on administrative leave and had taken an early retirement. And I will tell you, I have the greatest of respect for Dr. Jones, and he's really trying to get the information out. What was really so interesting, I was told, Eric, that he had actually went to this organization that spent 5 years studying this. I've forgotten the name of it, but it's some sort of a government-funded study group that was going to try to determine why the Twin Towers and Building 7 came down. And after 5 years, they came out with a report on the Twin Towers, and they said the government was right. It came down just the way the government said. But, of course, when Stephen Jones asked to see their material, he was told it was all classified, and the only way he could see it was if he signed a non-disclosure form promising never to reveal anything he saw. They have hundreds and hundreds of pictures and all sorts of material there, but it's all classified, and the question is, why would they keep it classified this long after the attack? Is it we don't want Osama bin Laden, who's supposedly hiding in a cave? We don't want Osama bin Laden to know what we found when we analyzed the pictures and the material that was salvaged from the 9/11 site, or are they concealing the truth from the American people?
Well, that's right. And you see, this is one of the reasons his being pushed out of the university is one of the reasons they can keep everybody so quiet. This would probably scare a lot of professors and a lot of other people, firemen, policemen, engineers. When they see what happens to him and they see that nobody comes to his rescue, they think, well, why should I risk my job?
Well, of course, this has happened to so many people. As you know, I know you knew Jimmy Waller, a courageous man, has spent a great deal of his own money. I'm talking about, many million dollars of his own on buying television ads and newspaper ads in New York City, trying to get the people there to understand that somebody was involved in bringing those buildings down. And he believed that they were brought down by explosives. They began to threaten his life. He told me he had a big boulder placed onto his car, and they did everything to harass him and to attack him. But the threats on his life actually forced him to leave the country. And isn't he hiding or living someplace overseas now?
Well, yeah, he's not. I don't know if he's in Austria, I think, or someplace. He decided just to get out. He had enough of it, but. Yeah, see, this is what they'll do is they scare people, and then people will say, well, if it were true, people would talk about it. But every time someone talks about it, they get attacked.
And so they get threatened.
Or they lose their jobs. Or they
lose,
yeah. But the evidence is just, it's all over the place. There's some of the most amazing things are out there on video. For example, you remember hearing about those dancing Israelis that were arrested and then quietly sent back to Israel?
Right.
One of them, three of them went on a television show in Israel, on a talk show. And there is a video, you can watch it on the internet now. It's on the internet. They're speaking in Hebrew, but the translator is saying, translating for you. And one of them is saying that they were over there in New York City to document the event. That's how the translator put it, to document the event. You got to ask yourself, wait a minute, who sent them to document it? And how did they know it was going to happen?
Well, let me tell you, Eric, that actually there, in the Pakistani section of New York, and Dr. Cuddy covers this in his book, Cover-Up, why it had been announced in the school by one of the young Pakistani students who looked out the window and said, a week from now, pointing at the Twin Towers, they won't be there. And many of the students in this school actually brought cameras to school that morning to take pictures of the Twin Towers coming down. The story was documented by the police and by a reporter. And the American people are never going to hear this. Certainly, the Israelis had warned the United States government that there was going to be an attack on America. Everybody, the people in Morocco, in Jordan, in German intelligence, French intelligence, Putin had warned the United States. At least 12 different countries had warned the United States there's going to be an attack in America, and there were many of these that named the Twin Towers. So, you know, I'm sure the Israelis were over here. They were going to get pictures of it. They knew it was going to come down, and our government knew it was going to come down.
A lot of people did. That's why there weren't many casualties either.
Well, there would have been a lot more, of course. They really intended for about 6,000 to die. Do you remember right after 9/11 when they kept saying, 6,000 people died? 6,000 people died? 6,000 people died? Well, maybe it was only 5,500. Maybe it was only 5,000. And it took about 10 days before we got down to 3,000. And, of course, really one of the most fascinating stories is the story of a fellow named Rick Scorla. He was chief of security in the South Tower at Morgan Stanley. And there were 2,700 employees there that morning. And he got orders, of course, after the plane crashed into the North Tower. And they could see the smoke coming out of the North Tower and the people jumping out of the buildings. He got orders, we don't know from whom, but he got orders not to evacuate the building. And then they were broadcasting over the South Tower public address system, please stay at your desk, there's nothing to worry about, this building is secure, it's only the North Tower, stay at your desk. And Rick Scorla actually ran up and down the aisles with a megaphone saying, get out, we're under attack. He got 2,700 people out of that building. If he had carried out his orders, if the people had obeyed the orders given over the internet, pardon me, over the public address system, the figure would have been 6,000. So I think that they really anticipated 6,000 would die. And then when they found that it was only about 2,800, I think there's 2,900 is the latest figure, 2,985. Why, of course, then they gradually lowered the figure. But nobody's ever asked who gave the orders over the public address system and who ordered this gentleman not to evacuate the building.
Well, yeah, I know there's a lot, and plus they're still dying. They're not actually done dying out there. There's thousands of them choking and gasping from the dust and the health problems. See, this is another sign of explosives.
Now, why do you say that? I mean, why, and I'm not questioning it.
Oh, no, I know, for an explanation. The reason is, or should we wait for the music? Is it a break?
Well, the longer we wait, by the harder to get those thoughts.
Oh, okay.
So we'll do that when we get back here in just a moment. Our guest is Eric Huffschmidt. And if you're out there in the listening audience and would like to talk to Eric, he's done a lot of work. He's written a book, and we'll tell you later how to get it. And he's got a great DVD as well. Give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But stop and think about it, ladies and gentlemen. Where did all that dust come from? How did you pulverize all that cement? If it was just pancaking, it wouldn't have pulverized the cement. It wouldn't have pulverized over 1,100 bodies. Eric, go ahead.
Oh, well, a professor at Davis University analyzed some air samples, and he analyzed them days after the attack. So he was analyzing what was around the site while they were trying to dig through the rubble. So this is days later. He gets some air samples and analyzes them and finds tiny, tiny little particles of metals and other things in there. And he says no process can create particles this small except for very high temperatures near the boiling points of metals. And so this is, again, these tiny particles, he says, it's a definite sign of explosives, because you will not, when a building just falls down, you don't get microscopic particles of metal just floating in the air days later. The only way to explain this is that there were explosives, there were extreme temperatures, and these tiny particles, because they were so small, were getting deep into people's lungs and getting into their bloodstreams. It's creating unbelievable health problems. There's 8,000 people, according to one news report, in a class action lawsuit right now.
Of course, the thing is that Todd Whitman, who was the head of the EPA at that time, told the people there was nothing to worry about. It was perfectly safe. Now, of course, she denies it, but then she works for the government and she's paid to lie. And, of course, she is criminally liable for the deaths and of so many people, and certainly for the illness of so many of the people now who were there at that site. And she claims, oh, if we told people it was dangerous. No, she didn't. You go back and read the things that were said at that time. She assured everybody was perfectly safe, and they sent them in without respirators, and they inhaled this terrible toxic stuff, and not only the people at Ground Zero, but elsewhere. And the thousands and thousands of people who are totally or partially incapacitated from pulmonary insufficiency as a direct result of this dust, and I believe it's a product of explosions. At least everything would tend to point in that direction. We have not been told the truth, and why would they lie to the people? Why wouldn't they insist that everybody wear a respirator? Why would they send them in there when their lungs would be destroyed, and now some of them have actually died, or some of the young people who were, you know, very athletic before, now they're just pulmonary cripples. You're talking about people 25 or 30 years of age.
Oh, yeah. Even William Rodriguez is having trouble just climbing stairs now. And he used to be able to go up, and he used to be able to climb the stairs at the World Trade Center.
Why don't you tell our listeners who William Rodriguez is, in case they don't know?
Oh, he worked inside there. He would go up to the top of the stairs. That was his job, was to keep the stairways clean and maintained. And so he was accustomed to climbing up and down these stairs. And so he was one of the people in the building at the time the planes hit. He was down in the basement at the time, though, so he didn't get hit by the plane. But he was there, and then he went up and down. He went running up the stairs with the firemen to help open the doors and let people get out.
Okay, so the most important thing about William Rodriguez is he was down in the second sub-basement. Just before the plane hit up above, there was a massive explosion in the basement, and then the plane hit up above. So I think that was really the important part of his story.
Oh, yeah, he heard an explosion before the plane hit, just maybe a second or whatever before the plane hit, which has never been explained either. And he even saw, it's not just his imagination, because one of the people below, in the basement below, got the blast.
Hold that thought, we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Eric Sufsmith, and we're talking about a man named William Rodriguez. Now, William Rodriguez was one of the chief janitors in the North Tower. He'd worked there for 20 years. And, of course, he was in the second sub-basement, as I remember, immediately before the plane hit up on the upper tower, a part of the North Tower. But he tells the story of having, you know, felt this massive explosion in the base of the building. It rocked the whole building. And then, several seconds later, the plane hit up on the top. And really what was so significant then, of course, he describes this man who had been down to the sub-basement, coming up, and his skin is hanging. He's been horribly burned. He saves the man's life. He gets the man evacuated. But, of course, William Rodriguez testified before the 911 Commission. Do you remember when it came out in the paper? And, of course, you won't. They took testimony from over 1,200 people, and only about 100 of them testified in public, and all the rest of them, they sealed their testimony for 30 years because they don't want the American people to ever know the truth about what happened, and that there was an explosion in the base of the North Tower and before the plane hit up above. So let's go to, of course, we've got Bill calling from upstate New York. Hi, Bill. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan, and hi, Eric. How are you doing tonight?
Doing fine. Are you listening to us on the Utica station? Where are you listening?
Actually, out of Cherry Valley.
All right, fine.
I got a couple of questions for you. I want to ask Eric if he's ever seen the video from the other side of the river, I think, of the helicopter that was going into the smoke of the Twin Towers. And just as it gets over the top of the towers, you see a couple of, the only thing I can way I can describe it is a couple of bright flashes coming from the bottom of the helicopter, and then as soon as the helicopter passes over, you see the towers start to fall.
You can also see that same helicopter in the video that shows the thermite, the molten iron pouring out of the South Tower. Right as you see the tower, right after you see this molten steel pouring out of the tower, the cameraman sees the helicopter, and then he moves the camera up to the helicopter. Then he moves it back down, and that tower's coming down.
Wow, I'll have to look at that again because I've actually seen the molten, you know, I've kept my eye on the molten lava. I'll have to look at that
again. Well, the cameraman actually moves up to the helicopter because he sees it too. And so you have the question of is the helicopter saying, okay, coast is clear, go ahead, or who knows what's going on, but see, these are the questions we'll never know the answer to. Is the helicopter just there by coincidence, or is it helping the...
Well, I think not. I got another question, too. What do you think that the president was trying to say when he gave his speech during the anniversary when he made mention of explosives in the building?
I don't know if he was... See, we're trying to figure out what that guy means.
You know, he talks about explosives high enough in the building to trap the people above. Well, it...
Yeah, but he wasn't referring directly to the World Trade Center. You don't know. It's hard to figure out if this guy is referring to the World Trade Center or something else. Look what he did to that Merkel over in Germany when he tries to give her a back rub. I don't know how you can predict that guy.
I think they have to understand, Bill. I think they're trying to confuse us. I think what you do is you throw out so much information that the average individual can't coordinate it all, can't correlate it all, and they just get confused. It's called cognitive dissonance. It's a technique that's used by mind control experts to confuse the population.
Do you think maybe that they were kind of putting it out there as kind of a backdoor in case it came out that there was a possibility of explosives being in the building so they can say, well, we were all on top of it in the beginning. See, the president talked about it.
Who knows what they're up to?
Yeah.
But the thing is, they know and they're not going to tell us because the last thing, think of the implications they want is for the people to learn the truth. Think of the implications. If the American people understood that there was some of our intelligence community was involved in the planned demolition of Building 7 and the Twin Towers, if I'm saying, you know, it would mean that those people died and they were murdered and nobody was held responsible and the president refused to press charges against them and the invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq and all the Americans and all the NATO troops and all the Iraqis and Afghans have died for nothing. Think of the implications. They can't, of course, let that get out.
Well, plus, you have then people saying, well, how come the media covered it up? And how come everybody else is covering it up?
Well, because the media is controlled. And if you listen to our programs, you know the media is controlled. I mean, this is the thing. We've got to get people to realize that they're not going to get the truth through the media. They've got to learn who they can trust. They've got to realize that there's a lot of material on the Internet that is planted there by the intelligence agencies, and then there's a lot of good material. You have to learn who you can trust, and that takes a long time. Hey, Bill, thanks so much for calling.
Thank you, Dr.
God
Stan.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and we've got Tony calling from Tucson, Arizona. Hi, Tony. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yes. I think I'm going to have to turn this radio down. It's the ongoing conspiracy, which I believe, from my research, has started with Abraham Lincoln.
No, it's been going on for thousands of years. But
you know, I mean, that was against our nation as a free Christian republic, and how they were going to change it. But the information I'm trying to bring out is that there was a man here in Tucson that was an immigrant that worked on the deciphering code, the Amiga, of the Germans, and that Roosevelt had it in his possession, and he deliberately let the attack on Pearl Harbor to benefit the international bankers who he was in concert with to actually change the money of our nation and to get us under their debt, because he entered into what they call a no-interest contract, where he was going to give these bankers the gold in exchange for their credit. But the issue that I was bringing out is that this man who lives here in Tucson actually gave me some of the paperwork about how that Amiga code was broken and how Mr. Roosevelt and all of his cronies were well aware that the attack on Pearl Harbor was to take place to get the United States into the Second World War.
Well, actually, of course, Tony, I went, of course, to Sterling Library at Yale University, and I actually have the pages from Secretary of War Stimson's diary, which we sent out to anybody who wants them. And the Secretary of War, member of the CFR, member of the Skull and Bones, talks about going to the White House on November 25th. And there are only four people there. There's George Catlett Marshall, there's Admiral Stark, there's himself, and I've forgotten who the fourth person was, and the president. The president said, you know, they're probably going to attack next Monday, you know. And the only question is how we're going to get into the war and get the Japanese to fire the first shot. It was all slam dunk. They left those boys there to die. And anybody would like to see those pages would be glad to send them free of charge.
Oh, this is backing up the information. Then another man who owned the Woodbury Soap Company explained about the deal that was made with four people that went to England to get the United States into the First World War, and how they blackmailed Woodrow Wilson because of his sex affair that he was having, and that they paid off the person who had the film and thing like that.
Okay, we're out of time, but God bless. Thanks so much for calling, Tony. Really appreciate it.
All right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest this evening is Eric Hooksmith. And, of course, if you'd like to give us a call, fine. But we hope that you'll just stay on the subject. We are talking about the coming down of the Twin Towers, what happened on 9/11. Mm-hmm. We've got Matt calling from Vermont. Hi, Matt. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Hey, listen, I just wanted to thank Eric Hooksmith for really doing a yeoman's task of, drawing out the deception in the 9/11 truth movement. And I think, you know, your listeners would benefit by going to his website, hugequestions.com, and looking at his videos that he just made. I think one of them is called The Masquerade Party. And it just shows how much deception there is in the 9/11 truth movement, and how we really need to get, like, there's a mainstream 9/11 truth movement, and they won't talk about Israel.
Now, what do you think, that this was a Jewish plot to take down the buildings?
I wouldn't call it a Jewish plot. I would call it a Zionist plot.
All right, well, fine. Oh, well, then, of course, then why, of course, did all the various commissions that were set up, which were predominantly not Jewish, why did they conceal it?
Because they were benefiting from it. You know,
if they're really, the Zionists really control Washington, D.C., why, when they invaded Lebanon recently, did we send our representatives over there and tell them to pull back before they could finish the job? If the Zionists really control Washington, D.C., why did that happen? And why, of course, why have we put pressure on them to give up most of the West Bank? No, there's a satanic plot there. Don't get put into this whole thing. It is not a Zionist conspiracy. It's a satanic conspiracy, and the Satanists are working within every religious group. Anything else you want to say, Matt? I guess we lost Matt. Okay. Well, anyway, do you have any thoughts on that, Eric?
Well, yeah, it's a complicated issue. See, the thing, people like Lee Hamilton were on the 9/11 commission, and when you ask, you know, why don't they expose anything? I mean, a lot of these politicians, they seem to just follow whoever provides them money. A lot of them are blackmailed. And so, you know, this country has no shortage of people that you can blackmail.
Well, I think you have to understand who Lee Hamilton really is. He was a member of the Trilateral Commission, which is a secret or semi-secret group controlled by David Rockefeller. He was there for 10 years. He's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Thomas Keene, who is, of course, the chairman of the 9/11 Commission, comes from the CFR. Five of the 10 commissioners on the commission came from the CFR. There was one, of course, who was actually Cleland, Max Cleland, who wanted to get to the bottom of it. They got him off the committee. The person who ran the committee was Philip Zelikow, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, personal friend of Condoleezza Rice, wrote a book with Condoleezza Rice, and he's directing this whole thing. The 9/11 Commission was a cover-up because the last thing they want is for people to understand that this was a operation, 9/11 was intent to taking us into a war in the Middle East. Hamilton has always been an apologist for the establishment of the satanic movement that we keep talking about.
Well, yeah, it may be satanic, but you see, what they really don't like is when you bring out that some of them are Israelis. They may be satanic, they may not be Jewish, they may not be religious, but, you know, there are some Israelis involved, like Silverstein and his friends, and that is what they really get mad at when you bring that up.
But you see, it isn't important what race they are, because I would say the vast majority of them are not Jewish, but they're all, of course, because they worship a different God.
No, it's not that. It's not that. It's not that. That's not what the. It's not that people are blaming it all on Silverstein. It's just that when you try to mention them, then you get attacked for being anti-Semites. Whereas when you attack Bush, you're an anti-Bush or anti-Republican. You know, they're just. But it's not true when you say that, like Larry Silverstein's involved, you're not anti-Semitic. You're simply pointing out a rather obvious fact that he had to have some knowledge of this.
Of course you did. You're absolutely right, Eric. And I agree with you totally. The thing is, what they're doing is trying to get us confused and fighting. And they've convinced so many people that this is a Zionist conspiracy. No, it is a conspiracy that involves people within the Zionist movement and within the Catholic Church and the highest echelons of the Protestant and Evangelical Church and every level of our government. But there is a spiritual battle behind that's energizing this whole thing.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of people involved. There's no doubt. See, it gets really weird when you look. Queen Elizabeth is knighting Rudy Giuliani. Carrick. Plus the fire commissioner, or whatever he is. I mean, what is she involved in?
Okay, well, this gets back to the Order of the Garter, which, of course, has been around from the 1400s, and this is a really, you really want to get into the really esoteric organizations. The royalty of Europe is all involved in these secret societies through the Club of Rome and the Order of the Garter. But that's getting a little off the subject here, so let's get to Mike for calling. Mike is calling from Santa Cruz. Let's see if this is Mike. Is this Mike?
Yeah, this is Mike.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Tired, Stan.
I bet you are.
You had the caller talking about the helicopters and the molten, whatever it was, thermite or metal coming up inside of the building. Shot from across the river. Across the Hudson on the northern Jersey shore there. That was 911 eyewitness. You know, he couldn't think of the name, and I think everybody should know what that movie is, because he has footage of his own, and it was shot from a vantage point no one else has. most of the footage. We have a lot of great movies coming out making great use of the footage, but most of it has been shot by the major networks, and it's still great footage. But it is different. It's from a different angle, and he does show those helicopters, and there's more molten stuff falling out of the buildings from his angle than the others. And he also does a great analysis of the rate of fall and a great observation of the dust clouds and what he calls a pyroclastic flow, which I think in the technical use of the word, that's a very good word to use.
All right. Do you have any thoughts on what Mike is saying there, Eric?
Yeah, I don't think his 9/11 eyewitness has the molten metal. That he has the helicopters and the other stuff, the dust. But the molten metal was taken very close to the towers. It was in Manhattan, down the street, and that's why it's such a good view of it. It's very close, and he also, and that one also shows one of the helicopters. So the eyewitness, the 9/11 eyewitness, just shows, you know, from a more distant view in New Jersey, at the New Jersey shore.
Right.
Anything else you want to
say? Well, he had great lenses, so he got some real tight shots. Well, I wanted to ask your guest a particular question I've had is the great, I think you touched on it earlier, the great quantity of molten metal in the base down deep underground that was molten, actually molten from the best I can understand for 5 to 6 weeks. And what in the, there must have been some kind of a plan to destroy something. They had apparently all kinds of extra thermite or thermate down there doing something in particular. It's more than what was needed to take down the building. There was something very odd and very strange and very unexplained so far about that.
Eric, I think that's a very good question. We've seen these pictures, certainly on Dr. Stephen Jones' website, that suggest that, you know, several weeks later, they're pulling up molten metal, which doesn't make sense. I mean, these could be planted pictures. If it is molten metal, I mean, ordinarily you stop heating metal, it just cools on down. It's not orange and glowing. So are they trying to confuse us? Do you think it really is molten metal? What do you think is going on?
Well, that's what when I first heard the reports, I was thinking, you know, they've got to be exaggerating. It can't be molten after weeks. But what you see in the pictures, it's red hot, which makes it about 1,200 to 1,500 degrees. It's not... At that point, only aluminum would be molten, not steel. But you still have to wonder, how could it be that hot after weeks? And I don't know how to explain it.
I'll tell you, one of the things that really bothers me, of course, you have to understand they're setting up straw men all the time. And if you go to the State Department site, statedepartment.gov, and look up their site on misinformation, they talk about this very thing, and they say, look, if this was really molten metal and it's being pulled up by these steam shovels or whatever it would be, you know, it would melt the hydraulics on there and they wouldn't work. So obviously these are fraudulent. And I can't help but think that maybe they simply planted these pictures to confuse us. I don't know. I mean, but I will tell you that they set up straw men all the time to knock them down.
Well, they do, but then you also get firemen complaining that when they started walking near there, their shoes started melting.
And it may very well be that it is true. I don't know. I mean,
it's just hard to explain.
One thing, they're doing everything they can to confuse me anyway.
Well, yeah, that's why we'll never know the details. If we want to know the details, we have to tell the government, the media, and everybody else, okay, we've had enough of this. What happened? Because we can't figure this out. There's too many missing pieces.
And the thing is that they have all the information, and they're keeping it all classified, and I wonder why. Anything else, Mike?
No, that's all, thanks.
God bless. Thanks so much, and let's go to, now, who is this? Is this Mark or Radkin?
It's Radkin, Dr. Stan.
All right, Radkin from Vermont. How are you doing?
Yes, thank you very much. Listen, I've read your book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and I really am so impressed with your analysis of things. But I do have a problem, and I just want to be very critical of your protecting, perhaps, you know, those people who may have been involved. And what I'm saying is, was a previous caller that called in. And I really believe that Israel is being used as a scapegoat, that even a lot of the good Jewish people are afraid to speak out, and those that have often been murdered. So it is very scary that if people don't wake up to understand that there's a controlled opposition, the Hegelian dialectic, you create the problem, there's a reaction, a solution, and these diabolical fundamentalist neocon Zionists, you know, the Bush, Cheney, but then there's also Wolf Fife, many who have joint citizenship with Israel. Where is their loyalty to? It's not to the U.S. Look at the USS Liberty that LBJ said that GD ship is going to the bottom.
Yeah, but certainly LBJ wasn't a Zionist.
But no, but he was controlled.
Was he controlled, or was he controlled? Was this part of a plot to justify an American attack on Egypt?
Well, they're both.
And I really believe that's what the Liberty was really all about. They wanted that ship to sink and all those Americans to die, and then we could justify going to war with Egypt. And the Americans just, they didn't cooperate. And there was actually two flights of naval planes that were launched from our own aircraft carriers to rescue the Liberty, and they were called back on direct orders of Lyndon Baines Johnson.
But who got Israel to do the attack on the USS Liberty?
We did. I mean, the satanic forces that controls both our government and Israel. We've got a great new four-tape set called the Holocaust, which really happened. And one of the tapes is with Barry Shamish, who talks about, is he a Jewish patriot who talks about the Sabbatean movement, and there's a Council on Foreign Relations, these internationalists who control Israel and control America, too. We're all being controlled, both our government and their government, by exactly the same people.
But it's, who are the people? See, this is the problem, is who the people are at the top of this.
Well, of course, the people that we don't know them all, but I'll tell you the people well along the way to the top are Henry Kissinger, Zygmunt Brzezinski, David Rockefeller, a man named Richard Haass, who today is, of course, the president of the Council on Foreign Relations. And if you read my August and September newsletters, we give you a great deal of information. We name a lot of names of the people who are intimately involved with this power structure that today rules the world.
Well, Eric, why do you think there's such protection for Israel?
Well, there are Israelis involved. Even Frank Lowy was one of the people who fought in the 1940s, for the creation of Israel. And so was Rahm Emanuel's father or grandfather. I mean, these guys, they fought for Israel. That and they came to America later. And Benjamin Chertoff, I mean, Michael Chertoff's mother was in the Mossad. See, there is a big Israeli component in this 9/11.
Larry Silverstein.
Well, then, of course, what are you going to do with Gary Bauer?
Who is
Gary Bauer, of course, is certainly somebody that panders to the Christian element. He was one of the founding members of the Project for the New American Century.
There are Christians.
And, of course, William Bennett, of course, he's there to take care of the Catholics. Oh, you got Frank Gaffney. He's there to take care of the conservatives.
Well, and there are. You see, there are. There's more. It's okay to talk about Bush involvement and Christian involvement, but when you try to say there's also Israelis, that's where we get into trouble.
Well, but you see, the thing is, there's some people who emphasize the Zionists. It's all of them, and if you understand it's all of them, and don't just pick on the Zionists and ignore, of course, all the others. That is where the problem is. There's some people who want to focus our attention on the Zionists and never mention that the influence is not because they're Zionists. Zionist simply means you want a Jewish homeland. But it is because there's a satanic influence within Zionism, within the hierarchy of all of our religious groups, within the Council on Foreign Relations, the Club of Rome, the Trilateral Commission, the Masonic movement, the Lucius Trust, the Theosophies, the Rosicrucians, certainly the Order of the Garter, and we could go on and on and on. These are all organizations that are playing an important part in what's going on today. And behind all of them is this same spiritual force. But what they want is for people to focus their attention on the Zionists without realizing, of course, that this infiltrates every aspect of our society today. You're right.
But we do talk about the other people. See, it's just that when you start getting into the Israelis, it's like, who put the explosives in the towers? Did Americans do that?
Do you know who put the explosives in the towers?
Who?
I'm asking you. Do you?
No. But you see, when you look at Silverstein, is good friends with top Israeli officials. Frank Lowy is also the dancing Israelis. You got hundreds of art students that were Israeli students. They could have been the manpower. That would make the most sense.
But you don't know that. It's a conjecture.
That's right. But you see, when you even bring it up, you get accused of being an anti-Semite. But that would make the most sense. How could Americans do this? Why would an American do it?
Because they are just plain evil. Until you recognize the evil in the world, why, you really can't understand much of what's going on. Well, let's go. We're going to go to our next caller. This is Mark in Wisconsin. Hi, Mark.
Hello, gentlemen. Hello. Yeah, I've been investigating this 911 thing for a couple years now, and I'm finding massive Israeli fingerprints all over the place. And when I call up any radio show or whatever mainstream radio show where they say have an author who's smearing Arabs or a guy who's having a convention on terrorism and radical Islam, and I ask him about the dancing Israelis, they hang up on me, and one of them was visibly shaken.
And so you think of this as really a Jewish plot then?
Yes, I do.
All right, fine. You're right, but I believe it's a satanic plot. And I believe, of course, if you focus on the Jews, you're going to miss what this is all about. And I believe Lucifer hates the Jewish race. And I believe, of course, he's using good people to push his agenda.
Well, we really shouldn't be saying Silverstein is Jewish. Is he really Jewish? I mean, the guy used to run a strip club. The guy is a criminal. I mean,
you're absolutely right.
But he may be Jewish. See, this is where people get confused. They think when we say Silverstein's involved, they think we're blaming all Jews.
That's wrong. Right.
I blame the Catholic Church for all sorts of different things. Nobody calls me anti-Catholic.
Well, I think that and you should not be, of course, blaming the Catholic Church. There's corruption in the Catholic Church. There's satanic movements within the Catholic Church.
Right, but when I point that out, I'm not some massive hate monger.
But what people are really doing is saying it's the Jews that did it. No, there are wicked people within the Jewish race, but there are wicked people within the Catholic religion. There are wicked people within the Protestant religion.
Yeah, we should talk about everybody.
We should talk about all of them.
Except the one group.
Yeah, we can talk about everybody but the Israelis.
We can even call for the nuclear bombing of Iran, which is unbelievable. How would you feel if another nation was saying we should bomb America? Imagine a nation demanding that. Here we are demanding.
Wait, what nation are you speaking of?
I mean, there's demands that we should bomb Iran.
Are you saying that all the Jews want us to bomb Iran?
No. I'm saying we are allowed to publicly talk about bombing Iran and North Korea. I'm not saying that has nothing to do with Jews. I'm saying we are allowed to talk about bombing them. And then when we just bring up things like Silverstein, then we're considered anti-Semitic.
The thing is that there's nothing wrong with breaking up Silverstein. I think he's a wicked, evil man. But the thing is that you can to say that the Jews put the explosives in the tower without any justification for it. The president's brother, Mark, I believe his name is Mark Bush, was certainly on the board of the
Marvin Bush.
Neil. Marvin Bush was certainly on the board there of the group that was related to security for the North Tower. We cannot, you discredit yourself when you make a statement like that because there's no proof for it.
It's just bringing up the issue of here's the possible manpower, and none of them that were arrested were ever questioned. They were never investigated. They were just sent home quietly to Israel.
And why is the same community trying to cover this thing up, too?
I don't think they're trying to cover it up. I think everybody has heard about the dancing Jews that they're the dancing Israelis.
Why do they keep hanging up on me when I call these shows then?
You'll have to ask them why they keep hanging up on you.
Why can't we flesh these issues out?
Well, because I think that you have not been hung up yet, but you're going to be hung up now. So anyway, we're out of time. And Eric is calling from California, but we're not going to have time to get to him. Well, Eric, I appreciate so much your being with us. Thank you so much for being with us.
Okay, bye.
Good night. Okay, fine. Well, of course, and Eric from the... Well, let's see quickly what Eric wants here. Eric, did you have a quick question?
I think the problem that people have is they don't understand the religious aspect of it. Without the Holy Spirit being within you to illuminate what's really going on, when you miss the spiritual aspect of things, you don't really get the whole picture, and I think that's the problem that a lot of people have. That was it.
All right, fine. And I think there's a big problem that we have is people do not understand that there really is a satanic movement in the world.
Exactly.
And they want to attribute it to one group of people or to one movement, which is a Zionist movement, but there are a lot of people who are Zionists who are not part of the satanic movement. I think we have to identify with the real enemy. The real enemy is not Zionism. It is not the Catholic Church. It's not the Protestant Church. But there are within every one of these this world satanic movement. And
Dr.
people
Stan?
Don't understand that.
Dr. Stan?
Yeah.
Jeremiah 17:9. For the heart is deceitful above all and desperately wicked. Who can know it?
God, amen.
It transcends race, creed, and color.
God bless. Thanks so much, Eric.
Take care, my friend.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, that was Eric calling. And, of course, right now, this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily a listener-supported. And we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to helping us as we try to reach out across America, trying to make people understand we're involved in a spiritual battle. There is growing anti-Semitism in America. And you'd be amazed at how many people are sending me things trying to convince me this is a Jewish conspiracy. The only thing we get more of is the people that are trying to make us think it's a Catholic conspiracy. Now, I certainly disagree with many of the precepts of the Catholic Church, although I think that many Catholics are good Christians and probably better Christians than I am. And I certainly disagree with many of the precepts of the Jewish religion, but I think many of the good people, and I believe God has a purpose for the Jewish religion, and I believe that Lucifer hates them and is doing everything he can to focus people's hatred on the Jews, and it's growing, and if we just talked about the fact that there's a problem, not that people are Jewish, and it's because they do not do what they do because they're Jewish, they do what they do because they're evil and wicked people, and that's what it's really all about. There is a spiritual battle. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, let me suggest you get it. We carry another excellent book by Ted Flynn, and that's called The Hope of the Wicked, and certainly The Hope of the Wicked by Ted Flynn. Excellent. And, of course, this new DVD that we're carrying now by certainly Michael Kaufman. Michael Kaufman's DVD, World Events and Prophecy. Pretty, of course, gives you an excellent overview. Of course, if you haven't seen my DVD on the Brotherhood of Darkness, fine. But I think Michael Kaufman does a good job on this DVD. Because I would have to say that some of the certainly the production isn't quite as good as I wish it were, but the material certainly is one of the finest bits of material I've seen, and his clips with Lou Dobbs and with some of the other people he has on there are superb. And, of course, the fact that you actually can read all of these things that he's talking about, and you'll see where the quotations come from, where these people actually admit that they worship Lucifer. That's what it's all about. And when you understand that Lucifer hates Jews, he's promoting anti-Semitism today. This is not a Jewish conspiracy. It is a satanic conspiracy against God and against man. So remember, of course, go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And then, of course, we hope many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters and helping us this 5 hours a day while we have to, of course, to address these issues. And hopefully, we're addressing them properly. I hope that you'll pray for revival. You'll pray for America. You'll pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and for our protection. And this is the time when I want to wish every one of you out there a wonderful Thanksgiving. And remember, Chris, we're giving thanks to God for the opportunity to live in this wonderful, wonderful country where we do live. We're going to have to take it back, because if we don't take it back, then freedom as we know it will soon become simply a remembrance of things past. But be thankful we're here today. Good night, and God bless you.